Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today we are talking about a wonderful movie called Grave of the Fireflies, which was a semi-random choice. But before that, we again start talking about some some particular food groups, go into details about some anime, and just talk about some other random stuff. Honestly, it's all great, wonderful stuff. If you want to catch a part of that wonderful wider conversation, patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast, $1 a month will get you access to that bonus content. And if you so feel inclined to join us live when we actually talk about this and everything like that, you can follow us on our Twitter or join us in our Discord, where you will get a ping for whenever we go live and you're able to come hang out with us and join us and get everything completely live and uncensored, and heck, even sometimes stoke the flames of our fiery passion discussion, you know, and just really kind of roll with it. But also, if you want to buy yourself some nice, wonderful treats and you're not sure what to really get, we do have an affiliate link for you for Tokyo Treat. And if you use coupon code FEATUREDANIME, you get $5 off your first month or your first box. And trust me, the treats are worth it, and they are always delicious, and it does help us grow. And now, on to the meat and brotatoes. Grave of the Fireflies aired April 1988. There's no producers for this, really, that I could find. The studio for it is Studio Ghibli. It is based off of a novel, and the genres of this are drama and historical. Now, the movie takes place during the end, roughly, of World War II, during the last phases of it. It follows our main character, Saita, with Setsuko, his younger sister. And it basically starts off with the end already known to you, right? You're just watching the events that kind of lead up to this point. And so it basically follows him and his younger sister through these times where they're just trying to make their way in the world and survive and live during the really harsh time of World War II, when they were where we were pushing on to their borders, so to speak, for that final assault. Basically, that's the premise of the story. In so many words, this is basically, as I believe you said, Rick, an apology or a sorrowful letter to the main character's sister, so to speak, is what it ends up being.
Yeah. It's definitely not easy to watch by any stretch of the imagination. And I did a little bit more research. By a little bit, I mean, like, not much. And from what I understand, it's not factual in the sense of this is exactly what happened. It's factual in the sense that most of the story happened, and this is how the director wished it did happen. He wished he died rather than surviving.
Right. To be more clear, it's the writer of the book wished he had died and along with his sister, simply because he blames himself for his sister's death. And generally, this is a very heavy anime. And so, and you have to take into consideration, too, that during the time, desperation and starvation can push a person to do unreasonable things without even meaning to when pushed to a particular point. And he was only a child. He was just 14 years old when this happened, and his sister was like 2 years old, maybe, or whatever, in real life.
Yeah, I think she started around 1.5, 2, and she didn't make it past 4.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it really shows a ugly side of life, something that's honestly, for a Ghibli film, this really kind of takes an ugly look at how things are.
Now, are you familiar? Are you aware of? Because I didn't notice it. Do you know where or if any enemy was said in the movie, or just it was a war? We all know what war it was, but the reason why I'm asking is, in my experience, and I've said it before, Ghibli does a really good job of not really putting blame on any particular party. And so I didn't think that they were like, oh yeah, we're fighting against blah, blah, blah.
Well, they were fighting against an enemy they don't need to. However, they were blaming a particular country when the neighborhood, not a country, but they were blaming the enemy when their home burned down.
Oh, no, I agree. Like, there was a blame, but it was a faceless enemy rather than a particular known.
It's the reason why that they're not going to name or put a face to it is because they were in an area where they saw and had to physically fight them. They just had to deal with the results of the planes, which you saw, if I remember correctly, a star on the wings to help signify the U.S.
I imagine it signified, but again, it's,
you don't have to. You don't. So when they're going overhead, you're expecting them to go, oh, look, that is the United States plane that is doing that. They don't need to point it out. The purpose of the story isn't them pointing out the enemy. The purpose of the story isn't them for them to say this is who the enemy was. It isn't that they're not placing blame on anyone either, because they did blame. He blamed and was very angry at the results of what had happened, along with some other people. Like, not blaming them is not a reality, because there was blame.
I agree with this. There obviously is going to be blame. There always is. But I have said in the past, and I continue to say, that Ghibli's very good about not affixing blame to any face, any
Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, they pointed and blamed a very particular subset, a group of individuals, when it came to the decimation of the planet. They also pointed out and blamed a particular group of individuals when they were invaded and taken advantage of. They also pointed out and made known of who perpetrators were. It's not that they're blameless or faceless. You can plainly see who they are. And same thing with Princess Mononoke. I'm sorry for saying that wrong. I just can't help but say it that way. Same thing. You know who the enemy is. You know who the main proponent is. You know who's being blamed. You know who's being pointed at. So that statement is not true.
Then I'm going to have to read to look at those, because I don't remember.
You know who the enemy is in the Princess Mononoke, right?
They
plainly state that it's for the Emperor. You have poachers. You have people that are demolishing and destroying the planet. Those are plain and blatant facts. Like, they are the ones that are doing this. The forest says that they are doing this. It's being pointed out that that is the result of it.
All right. Well,
when for Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, the exact same thing. It's like these people come in.
I just looked it up in Princess Mononoke. It's a fictional character. It's not anything real, any country, nothing like that.
Obviously.
But again, here we. Okay.
What you're going to say? Well, it's a nameless World War II enemy?
No, I'm going to say that Studio Ghibli is very good about not affixing blame to any real world party.
I am curious in how you justify that during the events of World War II for what is happening with him actually blaming everything.
I've seen him blame his father in that movie. I saw him blame his aunt in that movie. I did not see any particular nation propaganda, is what I'm saying.
You're saying that there was no propaganda being in there.
I'm saying that there are fictional people specifically in the lives. There's fictional people.
This is a work of fiction. So go ahead. You know, keep that in mind. This is a work of fiction. Yep. Okay.
And there's plenty of works of fiction. For instance, in Solo Leveling, there's a very clear real world enemy. So like that. What I'm saying is they're very good at being neutral. So you can watch it in any part of the world and not feel guilty for it. In any Studio Ghibli movie that I've seen, that I remember.
I can watch anything having the result of anything and not feel guilty for it. Like if you're feeling guilt over watching a movie over a particular set of group or individuals being... It's one way or the other, that's entirely on you. That is entirely your subjective feeling. But that has nothing to do with Ghibli not laying blame or it's a faceless enemy or anything like that. That is not what the primary purpose of their story is. The purpose of the story is to tell the story. It's not for them to have an entire propaganda movie about how so-and-so is a very evil individual and how they're the ones to blame for all these problems and issues. And they're the ones that are all blah, 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 blah. It's like that would defeat the whole purpose of the movie.
But there are many movies I've seen that do exactly that while still keeping the same premise. And that's why I'm saying either way, I feel like this is going a little bit off topic from what the show actually is. But what I was trying to say was, anybody you feel bad or angry against in the movie has a face, has a, I don't know how to say it.
Has an enemy that someone's laying blame to for a particular events that have happened.
A particular individual. Yes.
So it's not a faceless enemy and it's not that they're not laying blame. They're just not laying blame on a way that you would feel.
They don't blame the war on any particular person or any particular nation. They blame on the result of war. What's happening during the wartime rather than the war itself.
Okay.
You don't see him being mad at the planes for throwing the napalm, which I assume that's what it was.
He was mad at first. He was angry about his mother burning and dying.
Yep.
He was angry at his dad. Celebrating them doing that because then he could go and ransack buildings.
That was a twist. Okay. That was a twist.
But he
also was mad at his dad for not responding. He was mad at his aunt for not, but it's not.
He was mad at his aunt for a variety of reasons, and I would be mad at my aunt given the exact same circumstances.
Oh, 100%. I agree with that. But what I'm saying is a side was not taken. It's not an us versus them. It's a...
No, it totally was. It totally was them versus another enemy, though. That's the thing. That's the whole point of war. And he's like,
we lost the war.
How could we lose the war? And, you know, they're sad and upset about it. Yes, that is them being sad that they lost on their side. Like, okay. there was definitely a push. So I'm having trouble. I just don't understand, like, why you're saying, like, they don't lay any blame. It's like, we made several instances in points where it's like there is blame made. There is a point being of contention for them. It's like, here's the blame this, here's the blame that, I blame this, I blame that. And some of them are 100% in the right for it, right? Like how his aunt was, how his aunt acted, and the gradual progression of it too for his aunt, where she went from caring kind of at the beginning all the way through, I felt like was amazing, right? Like to see that evolution, and then for her to flip out on a like a 2 year old the way she did, I thought was amazing.
Okay. And yes, I agree with that. Okay, I think I have a better way to say it.
Okay.
I promise this will be the last part to bring up. But the enemy was not the vaguely defined allies, but it was the war itself. That was what the enemy was. The war itself was the issue, was the problem. It wasn't who was in it. It was the war itself being the it's not the antagonist. It's not the problem. The war itself was the problem. Does that make any better sense? It was the catalyst for a lot of things, and they hated the war itself rather than people on either side. Does that make sense?
No, he totally hated people like for a variety of reasons.
I mean, yes, for a variety of reasons, but
you can't say that no blame. This is my thing. You're like, well, there's no blame being laid. No, there is totally blame being laid out across the board for a variety of things. And it's not just in this movie. It's in a variety of movies. Plethora. Not even, and you can't say, well, it's because it's not based on reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because if that was the case, I mean, you would just basically relegate it to one movie, which is fairly based on reality, realistic events, like two movies, right?
Okay.
So you can't, I mean, like, I don't know about you, but I've never met a talking cat. I would love to, but I have never met a talking cat. You have a faced enemy there. Blame is being laid there for certain events.
But again, nothing with real world ramifications.
I mean, if she stayed there, there would have been ramifications. So
fair enough.
I would also have loved to meet a talking bird too. That would have been mega awesome.
Well, drugs will help you get there from what I understand. But we're on the straight and narrow.
Right.
But you know, so going forward, like you were saying, the aunt itself, or the aunt herself, went from a thank you so very much to these ungrateful brats. You never help, you never do this, you never do that. And
yeah, which I, again, you know, I reiterate, is like she was, you know, a child. Like, what do you?
Oh, 100%. What do you expect?
What do you expect a 2 year old to do? Get a job? Apparently so. I mean, like, well, that 14. Well, yeah, 14. Well, to his credit, right? The boy did say, like, well, the factory I worked at and I was employed at burned down to the ground. Right?
And it's not his fault, obviously. But the aunt didn't care. She was just, she was the quintessential nag. Like, that was her job. She loved nagging. She loved blaming other people. And it was frustrating because you saw everything. It wasn't fair. She was taking far more than her fair share of the rations that the children should have been getting. But the children didn't know any better. They were happy to get white rice. They were happy to do all that stuff. They were happy to have good food. But then she was complaining, oh, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, you're entitled, you're making too much noise. You know, when people are working and they need their sleep, you need to shut your kid up. And it was It was heartbreaking.
It was.
It was truly heartbreaking. And the way that, granted, I feel like the reason why he felt responsible in part was pride. He didn't go back. He left. He took steps to maintain his pride as a person, to, if you want to even call it, be a little bit rebellious. The aunt was like, well, fine, you cook your own meals, and we don't give out free food for people who don't work and stuff like that. She was hoarding the food, essentially, not giving out seconds when it was requested. And she took what little power she had and she used it in every ounce she could. And then he bought, with his mom's meager savings, a stove, cookware, things like that. And the aunt took it as a slight against her. That rascal even bought his own stove just to spite me.
Yeah, which I didn't understand. It's like, you just complained that they didn't cook it. They don't cook. They don't do this. They don't do that. And he's like, all right, that's cool. I apologize. I will go out. I will fend more for myself. You will not have to cook for us anymore. And I will make sure we cook for ourselves. That wasn't good enough. And then he's like in the room by himself, minding his own business. Same thing, goes in there, complains. Oh, the baby's crying because, you know, of whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing. I was like, you know, it's a baby. It's a baby, man. She's a baby.
It's a baby. Like,
what do you expect?
She might seem grown up, but like, yeah. She wants her mom. She wants her dad. The mom, the way the mom died, oh, that was brutal. That was impressive. That was something I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I was expecting the mom to get better at least, but to pass away with the maggots and just the disgusting visage of everything going on, that was pretty bad to begin with.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then every time they would write a letter to the father, the guy just wouldn't respond. It's not like they didn't get it, and I was like, oh no, the father died too. Well, no, he just abandoned them, didn't care.
Yeah, well, that's the assumption, right? And that's the assumption that he had too, right? That the father just straight up abandoned them and moved on with his life. And it's a sad type of reality, but it is a reality.
I mean, yeah, and once they got fed up, once they were bullied, essentially, and the aunt seems like a person who was going to complain for the simple fact that it was something to do, to lay the blame somewhere else. You feel better because it's not your fault. They're doing it. It's their fault. It's not your fault. It's not my fault because my house is in shambles. It's your fault for not cleaning my house. You know, it's... You're putting this extra pressure on me. And I guarantee the second they left, she was complaining that they left. Like, oh, what are they going to do? They're taking all this stuff. I'm not going to get my rations anymore. Who knows? She might have still been getting her rations from them because there was the last known address. Because they didn't get any actual rations past that. You know? And that was impressive. That a 14-year-old, I assume 14? Was that the proper age at the time? 14? 12, 14, something like that?
Well, I mean, like, that was his age.
Okay, yeah. So, a 14-year-old was able to find a house for his younger sister, take care of her, wash her, water her, obviously.
To the best of his ability.
Again, to the best of it, but the ability even at all was impressive. The fact that he had the wherewithal to not only take care of his sister in as best a way he could do, but the fact that he was able to find locations that were working, find things like that, adapt, if you will, to the point where he started stealing for food. And yeah, it's unfortunate, but he did get caught. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate he had to steal, but he did eventually get caught. He did eventually get beaten and then dragged to Is it a police station, a naval office?
Police station. It's a police station. It's the same thing. They have these little stations that are strewn throughout. It's the exact same thing they were taking there.
Okay. So he took him to the local authorities, and the local authorities like, you beat the crap out of this kid.
I think he's paid enough.
Yeah, not just that, but I think you might have taken a step far.
So, oh, yeah, no, because like how he beat him was just ungodly. It was ridiculous the level of physical abuse or trauma that the poor kid endured is just miraculous.
And it's just, he got a black eye, bruised everything, barely walking. And I think, I don't remember very vividly, but I thought he was hitting him with a stick every time he slowed down. As he marched him, when he was marching him from the shelter to the police station, I thought I saw him, like, he was walking a little slow, so he hit him, and he sped up. I think that happened the entire way, which is why he was so beat up by the time he got there.
Oh, yeah, no, 100%. I could pretty much guarantee it. Or he would just get angry and just stop, like, halfway and start hitting him, too. Like, I wouldn't put it past it.
That's a possibility, too. And it had nothing to do with... Well, it had something to do. He found somebody to blame. That's what it was. That's what it was. So, it's just... The way he was brought up was unfortunate. But the thing that gets me, the thing that I don't understand, the thing that kind of... I think he blames himself the most for, is it wasn't that he didn't have the assets to feed his sister.
Well, you know one what I mean? Of the things he honestly does blame himself for is that when he was like during the air raids and things like that, when he was breaking into houses and stealing stuff, he was actually stealing and eating food at that point in time. And it is known that he blames himself for that because he feels like if he had actually taken that food back and fed her, that she would have lived. Like, and that's why he blames himself for her dying. Like, that is a large part, a large reason why. And when she's sick, too, even in the movie, it's like it is pointed out that, you know, she has malnutrition. And like the doctor's like, hey, you know, she has malnutrition. You just give her some nutritious food and everything like that. And she'll start doing better. I mean, like, granted, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to eat when you have malnutrition. But and it's not like we're getting into any spoilery territory either, because, you know, how it's going to end. Like, you start at the end and. In his journey through the basically remembering what happened after he passed away at the very beginning, within the first 5 minutes, again, I cannot stress that enough. It's not like we're not spoiling that he dies and that she's dead. It is a fact. Like the beginning first 5 minutes, if you can't pick up on that fact when the guy literally says, oh, look, we got another one dead here.
Yeah.
That's on you. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it was rough. First 2 or 3 minutes, you have trash people walking around looking at kids just lined up, I guess, in a subway of some sort. And you see someone try to feed him and he's just so out of it. Not due to any drugs, but depression. He's just like, I don't want to eat. I just want to see my sister. And he rolls over slumped, you assume dead. And the guy who's cleaning goes through and rifles through his stuff in a rather disrespectful manner. And he goes, oh, this really isn't worth anything. And he's like, what is this? Oh, it's trash. And he throws it out, which kicks up some fireflies, which leads to the story starting. And you come to find out later that in his pursuit to give his sister good, nutritious food, he gives her, like, when he finds out, he could have very easily gone to the store. Well, not, that's not correct. Gone to his bank account, withdrew some money, and bartered for good food. Or during the raids, he could have found, like you said, he was eating it, but I could have sworn he also saw, like, other foods he could have brought back that he didn't, because it was not as beneficial as, say, linens or dresses or something like that.
Again, this, which is why I said, you know, when starving, right, it, you tend to not think rationally, and you tend to not think about the long-term consequences of whatever it is you're doing, especially when you're in starvation mode. When you're starving, trying to get a bite to eat, you know, it's hindsight's always 20/20. And the same, and to bring out like the money portion of it, right? He did have money and he did buy stuff later on. However, when there were really strict rations happening and they were really kind of hurt for food, he did offer. He's like, I will pay you. I can afford to pay you. Like, I will give you a lot of money. And yeah, like
to a farmer.
Yeah. And the farmer's like, look, this is it, man. This is all I got. Like, I can't afford to give you anything. Right. So it's not that he's
chugging
didn't
down some tea.
Yeah. So it's at that point, you know, when things are really desperate and you're in dire straits, it's like you can't really afford to look out for someone else if you're barely even to look after yourself, especially in a time like that. It's like, if I am barely able to take care of myself, I am not able, as cold-hearted as it is. One, he ain't relatives. Two, they ain't family. And three, he gave him a solution. He's like, you know what? Suck it up. Exactly, go apologize and just take it like, you know, take it like an adult.
Yeah. Although I would argue, so his pride stopped him from doing that. I 100% agree with that. But I would argue that if he would have gone back to his aunt, it would have been way, way worse. He might have gotten another 2 weeks, maybe. But maybe that 2 weeks would have been enough to refeed his little sister.
Right.
And to get her back on the right track.
Right.
But
yeah, they're, you know, again, it's like at that point, beyond there, it's speculation, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way for us to be able to know or point out, like, hey, this is X or this is Y, you know?
It's like, yeah.
It's like,
well, the thing that got me is when he fell down, when he was denied food, he ran away with his sister, ran, and had to, like, what, dodge out of the way of something? Of a plane.
Yeah, that was shooting at the ground, and they landed in, like, a tomato field, and they started taking tomatoes and eating them, and then they booked it.
Because there were so many tomatoes around, and then you find out for, like, a month or two, he was just stealing food from random farmers, which led me to believe there was plenty of product there. And the only reason he got caught is because he started stealing, what was it?
Sugar,
because his sister needed the sweet nutrients from that. And then he takes her to the doctor after she gets really sick, and then he's like, you need nutrients food. And then almost immediately he goes to the store and buys watermelon, eggs, good stuff.
Chicken, everything else. Yeah, chicken, yeah. Which is like
a little too late, I agree. But
yeah. So, I mean, again, you know, I know I'm a broken record. Hindsight's always 20/20, right? And by the time she had reached that point, you don't feed her a very heavy meal like that. You got to keep it light-ish, like porridge or rice porridge or something like that. Something, and you do it slow. You eat it slowly. Yeah. You don't sit there and have a really heavy meal. It's got to be nutritious, but it's also got to be like light on your stomach, and rice porridge is kind of the way to go. Eggs was that's a good route to go. A chicken, not so much.
It was a bit much. I agree, but he never got the opportunity to even do that. He was able to crack open a watermelon, get her to like take a little bit in, and she was smiling and he was happy with her. And then he mentioned that was the last thing that she said. She said, thank you, or something along those lines. It tastes good. And then slipped into a coma.
Yep. Never woke up from that.
And that was heartbreaking, because I was like, oh, it might. No. I'm like, this might not be the thing that, no. And he kind of loses himself. And then he takes her the tin of candy, the candy tin that she was always holding on to, that she even had marbles in that signified what it once was. And he gave her a proper burial, as proper as he could. Gave her prayers as best he could. Burned her.
Well, yeah, he cremated her. But, you know, we don't need to like give a play by play of the scene. Just talk to me about it, man. Talk to me.
The thing that got me about the whole thing is he still had the wherewithal, the idea to take bones and keep him so he wouldn't be without his sister.
Oh yeah, no, and that's one of the more touching things, right? Like even at his death, he kept her with him, and you know, like and you know, even though it's a sad ending, sad beginning too, yeah, right? But you know that at the beginning, like they're there together in the afterlife. Right, because the beginning is him with his sister as they journey through, you know, reaccounting the events that have happened that led up to that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, if you look at it without all the depression, it's a really amazing story about a brother who loves his sister.
Yes,
and the lengths that he will go to entertain, feed, house and take care of in every aspect that he possibly could think of, even to the detriment of himself, even if it meant being beaten for stealing.
Yes.
So, and I think, again, from what I understand, this is the author's love letter, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Apology, if you will.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, it follows the whole "I wish it was me. Why couldn't it have been me?" kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, very depressing. Very.
It is a very depressing anime. It is a very, very depressing anime.
I think it's worth the watch. I'd like to point that out, but good Lord.
Yeah, buckle only up for because the story a was ride. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Show up heartless or prepare.
Yep. All right. So, on a scale of up to 10, sir, how would you rate this?
Now, I got a question for you as far as the rating goes.
No halves.
Am I rating
between 1 and 10?
Obviously. I get that. But my question is, do you think we've been rating it for our enjoyment or for the quality?
Oh, I rate it based on both.
I did not enjoy it at all. But it was a phenomenal movie. Like it, I would not watch it again just because it's that depressing to me. But I would encourage those with a strong enough stomach to watch it because it is a genuinely amazing movie. Fantastic storytelling. The emotions that are conveyed, the emotions you feel from watching it, 100% spot on. They did a damn good job.
Yes,
I just don't like it because of the emotions. And I think they did their job really, really well. And they shouldn't be, like, my score shouldn't suffer because of my own personal, I don't want to feel that way.
Okay.
But the fact that they made me feel that way speaks volume as to the talent and the production and everything. Music was on point. The tension, the suspense, everything.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I know, on a scale of 1, yeah, I know, I'm getting there, but like, do I want to watch it again? No, 2, but at the same time, it's not that, it's way beyond that. It's not a 5, because I've seen other stuff, and I felt bad about other stuff, and it didn't hit me the same way. It doesn't have the staying power.
Right.
I will give this a very reluctant 8.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is I wouldn't want you to watch it without a complete understanding of what's going on. You should not be blindsided by this because this will hit you. And yeah, it'll hit you.
Okay.
But it's I can't quite go so far as to say it's a masterpiece, but it's close. I mean, heck, it's a Ghibli film.
Yep.
It's good.
Yes.
It's real good.
Yes. The Ghibli films usually are good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I give this a reluctant 8.
Okay. I give this a firm 9. So I thought it was great. It was good. I'd actually probably watch this again. I didn't bawl, but I did tear up a little bit, quite a few times, you know, just, but it wasn't sobbing or anything like that. It was like the endings where it kind of really got me, where it was just like, oh, that's heartbreaking. But that's largely it. I mean, like, it's a wonderful movie. Definitely, if you don't like something that is very drama and emotional heavy, this definitely is not the movie for you, right? This is something that you have to be in a very particular mindset to watch. So, and if you're going into it completely blind, it will definitely blindside you 100%. Like, if you're like, oh, I hear it was a great movie, and you just watch it, it'll blindside you like no tomorrow. So, you know, just kind of, you know, keep that in mind. Like this is one of those movies where you just don't randomly go up to, you should totally watch this movie and not give any pretext.
That's evil.
So, all right. Next week, we are going to watch Saga of the Tanya the Evil, the movie. Because we haven't watched the movie like I originally thought we did.
Like we wanted to.
So, well, that's all the time that we have for today. I don't have anything else before I wrap it up. Sir, do you have anything you would like to add?
No, this is... I recommend it if you have a stomach for it. It's definitely something I probably would recommend you watch at least once in your life. But yeah, that's it. I'd have to, if I watched it again, I would want to watch it with somebody I cared about. So.
Okay. No, fair enough.
That's all for me.
Well, if you feel like we did it too much justice, not enough justice, or anything like that, feel free to reach out to us. We have all our contact information and everything like that available to you on our website, featuredanimepodcast.com. If you want to support us, help us grow, or listen to the pre and pro show content that we usually do with every episode, you can go to patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. $1 a month to get you access to that bonus content. Or if you join us on our Discord or follow us on Twitter, you will get a ping every time we go live, and you will be notified when we do stream on twitch.tv/featuredanimepodcast if you want to come join us. And if you want to support us through other means, we do have Tokyo Treat affiliate link for you in the show notes as well. And if you use coupon code featuredanime at checkout, you get $5 off that first box. And trust me, it is worth every penny, because treats are always oh so delicious. And until next time, I'm Jack.
I'm Rick, and we'll see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.